This is Beyond the Resume, the podcast that brings you the stories, advice, and insights behind some of the most successful people in real estate. Beyond the Resume is brought to you by Jackson Lucas Executive Search, the industry leader in human capital solutions. Here is Chris Papa and Lisa Flicker.
David, welcome to the podcast. Appreciate you coming on here. How you doing?
Thanks for having me, Chris. It's great to see you and Lisa again.
Yeah. How's Palo Alto? Are you in Palo Alto today?
I'm down in Los Altos. It's another boring, sunny in 65, brutal winter day here in the Bay Area.
It does get kind of the same, right? You can't really appreciate it that much. That's why I go back to New York every month or every other month. I'm like, I'll be there next week, and it's supposed to be the coldest week of the year. So I come back here and it's like, oh, thank goodness I live here.
Nothing gives you gratitude like a week in New York.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, my wife and I lived in Boston for about almost 5 years. And it took us about a year to adjust to the cold. You know, it takes a while to kind of get your sea legs under you a little bit in terms of like surviving that weather. And then you move back to California, and we went back like 9 months later. We lost it all again. Like you lose the toughness real quick. So we're soft Californians again.
I know, but happy.
Yeah, but happy. Yeah.
Well, we didn't come here to talk about the weather. Maybe we did. Let's talk about you. Let's talk about Reseed Partners. You're the president and co-founder of that. Can you tell everyone what Reseed is and what you guys do?
Yeah. So we're a real estate private equity firm that has started to help identify what we believe are exceptionally high potential local real estate operating partners all around the country and back them with the institutional quality tools and ideas and best practices and sourcing materials, et cetera, to go out and find, identify, purchase, and ultimately operate exceptional real estate assets all over the country.
Well, that's awesome. So can we dive in a little deep here? So like what type of assets, what locations, like anything specific? I know you invest in with local operators, right? You kind of help, you kind of have I think it's like the tech model, incubator type model, right? Is that correct?
Right, the Y Combinator, which I am a huge fan of.
that's you're spot on, Lisa. There's been some folks that have wrote about the business model, and they've sort of used that parallel as a way to describe a little bit of what we do. In a lot of ways, there's similarities to what Y Combinators or other accelerator programs have done. At certain points, the business model diverges from I think that model, and we can sort of talk more about that, but. But yeah, in general, what we've done is we're incredibly fortunate to have one of my founding partners as well, a guy named Moses Kagan. He spent a decade plus blogging and writing on Twitter, and really, I think, being one of the leading conversationalists publicly about real estate investing, and specifically about real estate investing in sub-institutional multifamily. And he's an operator and an investor himself, runs a large, successful investment and property management business down in Los Angeles. He comes from a family of professors. So he's wired to want to teach. And he has the gift to take sometimes complex, sometimes artificially confusing topics, which again, I think real estate's classic in making it sound more complicated than it is. And he really does a really wonderful job of distilling those things down to sort of the core essence of the topics that matter and, you know, how to evaluate investments, how to think about, some of the variables that can really move the needle in meaningful ways on real estate investing or property management, things like that. And so anyway, the reason that's all important is he's developed like unbelievable sort of trust and empathy with like a massive audience, through all of his writings. And when we launched the business, we wanted to access that network of people that had been following him and he developed some trust with to find these local operating partners around the country. And so unlike any other real estate private equity firm that's been launched, we were able to launch and overnight have literally thousands of people sign up to either work for us as potential operating partners or invest alongside of us. And so that was a kind of a wonderful kind of aha moment. And, you know, one of the top days of my career, April 4th of 2023, when we actually went public with this whole thing. And, you know, the reception's been incredible ever since. And so it's allowed us to, I think, you know, find folks that otherwise would be difficult to find if we were starting a more traditional firm. And I think through that, we're able to unlock some pretty interesting investments.
So what are you looking for when you're finding these local operators? Like, is there some sort of metrics that you're kind of looking at, or like a certain stage of where they are?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because we, almost unintentionally have sort of backed into this gigantic data set of existing investors and operators that are focused on a whole host of business plans within different geographies, within specific sub markets, within a moment in time. And so you're kind of getting these like really fascinating snapshots around how people around the country are thinking about sort of the wave of next investment opportunities in their own sort of local micro markets. And so it's been a wonderful lens for us from a market research perspective, understanding sort of some of the supply and demand variables that come to play, and I think really direct the markets you do and don't want to be in from a long-term perspective. But all that to say is we have a sort of unique approach in that we are non-traditional and that we want to buy and hold assets indefinitely. We have no intent to sell. To date, we've been an all cash buyer. So we can come to the table and again, pay all cash, do our construction all cash. And only once, stabilized will we then potentially go put debt on an asset, which we have not done to date. But that's certainly an option for us to do downstream. So for us, it's finding people that we think have exceptional top end potential as investors themselves. And so we want to identify a level of kind of obviously intellect and curiosity as it relates to investing in real estate, a really deep, almost obsession with their local market, being active in public policy or really understanding what's happening from a permitting or a zoning perspective, redrawing lines for schools, the changes where and why we all might want to live with, young kids, all those things that are incredibly micro, when it comes to each little town and city. People that are obsessed with that, I think, can really do well with our program. The good news is too, real estate's not that complicated. Like if you're willing to work hard and you're willing to be honest about the reality of the opportunity and not just sort of greedy and sort of bullish and aggressive for the sake of getting a deal done, and you have some sense of patience, you can really be successful and build some fantastic businesses, doing this. And so we want to find those people that want to do this for a long time, aren't trying to get rich quick and, flip and rip stuff and make a buck and get out of there, but really want to like change the American like public housing stock in a way that gives us sustainability and duration and better communities. And also is a good investment. We can see the long-term investments and the depreciation, benefits of doing things once and doing them right versus lipstick on a pig and make it the next guy's problem. And so, I think the beauty of this business is it really marries, I think, what is just a wonderful way to invest that's worked and made, families all across the country exceptionally wealthy, in generational ways that can really, you can pass on from generation to generation. But also I think it's really improving what we have in terms of, a housing crisis. And we need more, well-positioned, sort of well thought out and efficiently designed, and more importantly, well-maintained housing stock out there. And so, that's what our teams are doing on a daily basis.
So David, when would somebody approach you? Is it, I just left my job at a big private equity firm and now I'm putting together this operating platform, no assets, no money, or is it further along? When would somebody look to meet you?
We meet them all across the spectrum. I mean, so we have folks that are just starting to transition in and they will apply. We run these annual cohorts. Again, that's sort of the Y Combinator adjacent, type of program. So plus or minus every 12 to 18 months, we run a new cohort. We accept applications. We then basically turn the hat around and ostensibly become a college admissions department, for 100 days and really need to, systematically process through all the amazing applicants. And again, I don't say that lightly. We are getting, some exceptionally talented people with unbelievable resumes and experiences, having worked for, the top institutions, across the country in a real estate perspective, as well as people that have built their own, and invest in themselves and have built massive portfolios in their own towns, on their own merit. And so we're seeing it from both sides. We're at a point now where we have found that the velocity of opportunity and the level at which we want these people to be able to deploy capital is going to require you to have a reasonably high baseline knowledge of the business. And so we're trying to identify folks that have, you know, they've bought, you know, a couple dozen assets. They're managing 10 to 50, you know, different units right now. And again, right now the focus is multifamily. So it's apartments, townhomes, things like that. And they've really got their, they have an understanding of the business. They've realized how hard this business can be to scale, but they also have, you know, a really well thought out thesis around their market that, you know, when you bolt together what they've found and discovering what we can offer and provide, you can really drive an efficient business for them. And I think provide like an amazing opportunity for access for those investors that aren't, you know, sitting there locally and understand the nuances of some of these, you know, wonderful markets that, you know, wouldn't pop up on a, you know, on a Green Street report, on CoStar reports, but are out there and, you know, just wonderful places to own awesome buildings for a long, long time. And so, finding folks that kind of have that baseline experience, but also, you know, want to build an empire and we want to help them get there. You know, those are the folks we want to partner with.
So you mentioned your colleague's kind of background, and he brings sort of like the funnel of followers that can kind of, that's kind of how it started. Like what's your background? How did you get into this? Like where, let's start with you. Like where did little David grow up? What did he want to be when he grew up? And then kind of, how did you get into this world?
Yeah, no, I grew up in a suburb just outside of Portland, Oregon called Lake Oswego. Went to a public high school there, Lake Ridge. You know, played sports and, you know, sang in show choirs and you know, did all the fun stuff, student government, all that stuff through high school. And then was fortunate enough to come down to Stanford and play football at Stanford, which was the single greatest thing that ever happened to me. You know, I got to go to a school that I didn't deserve to be at. I got to meet a girl my freshman year that is now, you know, my wife and you know, the mother to, you know, my two beautiful children. I made some incredible friends, was introduced to the Bay Area, which to me is second to none in terms of just this melting pot of sort of optimism and creativity and acceptance of diversity and a non-acceptance for the norm, you know? And so you sort of become wrapped up in that and you can't help but be excited about what's possible. And then, you know, was able to play football for a short time in the NFL and then ultimately transitioned into a business that I helped kind of lead and run. And ultimately we sold a firm called T3 Advisors that I started with in Boston and then moved up to California as we expanded and opened more offices and hired a bunch of folks. And that was a more traditional commercial real estate brokerage and consulting firm. And our specialty was helping high growth tech and life science companies from an advisory perspective. And so we'd come in and ostensibly we tried to build our team to look a lot like what the internal Google real estate team would look like. So all those same resources that you would have if you were one of the giants. There's so many companies that were growing and scaling at a crazy clip and, you know, had a lot of venture dollars behind them that they needed to be responsible with. And so a lot of those firms loved sort of this like kind of pure play that we took, which was only working with those guys, never representing landlords, never owning any assets. So really ripped out what is traditionally a very conflicted world, which is commercial real estate and particularly commercial office, and really tried to make us like a pure player and a really strong advocate for, you know, those entrepreneurs and the companies that they were building. And so we successfully sold that business in the summer of 21 to a firm called Savills, it was a big company out of London, and helped them expand their North American presence. Yeah, my three other partners are still there, you know, in leadership roles and loving that. And my calling was to go build again. And you know, so a couple of years ago, that's what we did. We went out and started Reseed, which has been a ton of fun.
So there's folks listening here that are probably earlier on in their careers and they're like, wow, I would love to kind of get where David is. Like, what skill set did you have to pick up in order to become successful? Starting, I guess, at T3, like, did you have to learn just how like a deal worked? Like, did you know any of this stuff before you got into real estate, or how did you learn it?
No. I mean, again, you know, you asked like, what did a young David want to be when he grew up? Like, it definitely was not, you know, a commercial real estate, you know, person, broker, you know, deal investor. I mean, you know, no one says that, right? I mean, so this is very much something that you discover later in life. And even at Stanford, I mean, I you know, had no interest or focus that or plan to go into real estate. I thought I'd be in traditional finance or consulting or something like. And I mean, so I think, you know, for me, and I think for a lot of people that get into real estate, the wonderful thing about this industry is it's still a very people-oriented business. And if you're someone that is, you know, enjoys building, I think, relationships and understands sort of the value of a trusting relationship for a long term, you have a baseline, I think, fundamental advantage to be successful in this industry. From there, I think there's certainly another kind of strength and feature of real estate is there's a thousand different things you can do with real estate. I mean, it's just a massive industry and has so many like wonderfully interesting little corners that people have built out kind of a niche or specialty business and doing something better than anyone else on the planet. And that's valuable. And so I think it really allows for a lot of kind of entrepreneurial spirit and creativity to sort of find where you seem to gel relative to your skill sets, your focus, your interests. And inevitably, like there's a level of luck around when and where you get introduced to this industry that has a big impact on like the tailwinds that you can ride as you continue to grow. I think for me, like, you know, falling under and learning from some exceptional senior people was far more valuable than I understood at the time. And so I think when I'm talking to folks now, it's, you know, sure, go to a big shop, go to a small shop. The only thing that's going to really matter is there a senior person there that actually cares? Like, does anyone take any interest in your development? If so, that's where you want to spend some time, you know? And so I think there's so much of again, it's a people-based business. And I think, you know, kind of identifying where you can go apprentice and really, you know, see how the sausage is made, that's where you're going to grow the fastest. Again, this business is not complicated like on paper. You know, it's complicated in relationship. It's complicated in nuance. It's complicated in access. And so, you know, that becomes the way you need to sort of like develop your skill set, what your superpower is, where it is and how you focus and then ultimately hustle. And I think those, you know, a lot of those traits end up, you know, I think leading to, you know, a lot of successful outcomes for folks that deploy them.
And, you know, I feel like what you're saying is going to be really interesting to a lot of our listeners, because I think there are a lot of people who are smart, are hustlers, work hard, want to start a successful real estate business, but they don't know what they don't know, which a lot of that is industry context. Real estate is such an incestuous business. I met my husband, we started a real estate company together, and literally like years later, we were like, all right, we're going to get rid of this company because we didn't know enough senior people. Had either one of us had a parent that was in real estate, I think, you know, it would have been a totally different story. So I love the fact that in a lot of ways, this like helps bring people into real estate who otherwise might not consider a career in real estate. And we need that talent.
That's right. That's right. And it's also, you know, you touch on a really important point too, which this industry is incredibly incestuous. And that is a negative. And I wouldn't contend any other way. I mean, it's a world that is very closed off to a lot of people that should be in it and could be incredibly good at it. That was actually one of the reasons we started Reseed as well, is particularly if you're trying to be a real estate investor, unless you come from a family of means and have, you know, a wealthy, you know, dad or uncle or yourself have been successful, in order to provide your GP co-invest on these deals that you're buying, if you don't have it, like no one's going to back you. LPs won't come along. You know, they want to see some of that skin in the game. So, you know, and for us, we sort of said that's ridiculous. Like, I mean, if you're an excellent sourcer and an excellent operator, just because you didn't hit, you know, the genetic, you know, roulette table the right way, doesn't mean you shouldn't be out there sort of deploying your intelligence and your strategy and your game plan to help make both yourself and a bunch of investors a lot of money. You know, and so that's a really cool, in a weird way, a cool opportunity. And I think another way to sort of differentiate is who are those folks that should be, you know, in the mix and in the game that aren't yet. And very much, you know, Reseed sees that as, you know, one of our responsibilities to kind of shepherd those folks in, and not just into the business, because most of them have started, but really kind of accelerating that business, you know, in a way that in a traditional model, they may not have been provided that opportunity.
I love that, man. That's great. Okay. You mentioned the great weather we're having here in the Bay Area. You should take off that sweater because you're just entered the hot seat.
Oh!
I don't know what that means, but I really like it.
You're ready.
You're ready.
I can see that. If you played it down in the NFL, you might be able to handle this.
Here we go.
You might. We'll see.
Give them an easy one.
It's an easy one. Do you have a favorite book or podcast recommendation?
Oh, man. I mean, I listen to so many podcasts when I'm driving or exercising. So that's probably the easier one for me. I mean, I'm a sucker for Invest with the Best. Patrick O'Shaughnessy, I think he's just one of the best interviewers I think I've ever come across in terms of his ability to kind of dig into the interesting nuances of some of these, exceptional business leaders he talks to. And then again, for me, unfortunately a lifelong suffering Portland Trailblazers fan. So any Portland Trailblazers, basketball podcast, I am one of 11 subscribers too. So I'm always staying, up to date on our, continued tanking season.
I'm a New York Giants fan. So I can see how we're doing. You've invested in a lot of companies, different deals. Like, what has your been your most memorable deal? You said your one of your favorite days was the day you guys went public with this company, but what was kind of your most memorable deal when you think, wow, that was pretty cool?
Yeah. I spent the first part of my career, at T3, where we were not doing investments. I mean, so that was very much it was a service business. And so we were running, a consulting firm that was, 60% of our revenue was coming from brokerage, traditional commercial brokerage fees. And so that was a very, very different business, wonderful in a lot of ways. I mean, there's some really cool deals we did there, structuring, build the suit opportunities for Adobe when we were in Massachusetts. We did a really interesting loan guarantee and huge incentives deal for a company called A123 Systems to go develop lithium ion batteries out in just outside of Detroit, Michigan. That was kind of when Obama was in administration. There were some wonderful loan guarantee programs and RPE programs that were, I think, really proliferating what was possible in clean tech. So those were some really, fun projects to work on. It's public-private discussions, you're working in government incentive dollars with, developers and trying to kind of put all this together. And those are exceptionally complex, but really rewarding, when you ultimately were across the finish line there. Obviously selling our business T3, which, I helped build for 16 years in hindsight, a very fortuitous time to sell. Summer of 21 was we were finishing another great year, and a lot of the hard times that commercial real estate's experienced the last two or three years were not quite in sight yet. And so we got really fortunate to exit that business when we did. And I think in a lot of ways, meeting Rhett, who is my co-founder now. And he was really the brains behind a lot of what Reseed is and has become, notably because he's been an allocator his whole career, ran two large family offices as a CIO, helped run a hedge fund. So he's always been, in the investor seat and evaluating what didn't exist. And I think, Reseed is very much designed to serve the former Rhett. And to say, listen, if you're a long-term investor with the ability to focus on duration and take advantage of all of the unbelievably wonderful parts that come with owning real estate for long times, all the tax and depreciation benefits, the compounding components they have, once you own these things for a long time. And if you do it in a measured way and don't over-lever, it's a wonderful way to develop, I think, a lot of interesting investment opportunities for yourself today and for, future generations to come. And so I think for us, kind of building that business for the former, Rhett and his former seat and seeing the reaction of the folks that we now go to that are running different multifamily offices or single family offices and sort of describe what we're doing. And they just sort of light up and they're like, finally, thank God, there's a very, a sense of relief. And I think enthusiasm for the fact that we're doing this. And so, that makes you smile. That makes it easier to, work late, get up earlier, continue to sort of build and hopefully make this thing into a really meaningful business for all those that are involved.
I love that. So, David, do you, I assume that at T3 you did a lot of hiring, but in your new role, do you help your portfolio companies to hire folks? Do you hire folks? And if you do, we'd love to just hear what you personally think makes a good employee.
Yeah. I mean, so we are the most hiring that we do is really in the selection of the cohort, you know, and it's a slightly, you know, modified version of hiring. Like, these people aren't coming on as, you know, W-2 employees of ours, but, you know, we're running through, you know, an incredibly detailed and specific process to identify the people that we want to work with. So, you know, in a sense, I mean, we're looking for those traits that how they get paid is sort of irrelevant from like what we're looking to identify with them and make sure it's a good match with us and then bring them on. You know, I think that when we think about the traits that are really important and even hearkening some of my old T3 days, I was a big believer, and I'm incredibly biased, which I admit. I think there's something special about people that have been able to operate and exist in an environment with their peers and both compete with your friends to be, you know, the first chair of violin, the lead in the play, the starting quarterback, whatever that may be in terms of some sort of team dynamic, and understand that we're all going to compete to get that top spot, and then be able to turn the hat around and say, all right, now we're all on the same team and I need to put my own individual, you know, desires and accolades and focus to be second to what the group of these humans are came together to accomplish. And I have found, at least in my career, the way that I've ran my businesses, finding people that understand what that dynamic looks like, and that one isn't more important than the other, and you really do need both. And certain times you need to dial one up and dial one back. But if you get someone that's too headstrong and too focused on, you know, I and me, and not enough understanding about like sort of the greater we, like we really have problems. And conversely, if you're just relying on everyone else to sort of get everything going and you just sort of just, you know, hoping to kind of ride the wave, like that's not helpful either, you know? And so that focus and understanding of how does the, you know, the compilation of a group really produce things that are outsized, you know, from what any individual could accomplish. Like, that's the special secret sauce that makes sports, music, theater, business exciting to be a part of, you know? And that's, to me, where you start to really define what culture is about, is, you know, the production and kind of the ultimate sort of performance of the product or the pitch or the, you know, the game, whatever it may be, like that finish line is, I think that is like, that's the stuff that we wake up and we get excited about and that we feel accountability towards, and we get nervous, you know, around performing, you know, up to our best ability because we care. And so I think, you know, identifying the folks that want to be a part of that, that understand the magic that happens when it works, and also understand the ramifications when it done it, and are prepared for that, and understand there's a lot of components of business or sports or music that we don't control, and we have to get comfortable with that, you know, and still be willing to put ourselves out there and be willing to learn. And I think, you know, that's very much of the folks that I've been most impressed with as I've watched as leaders, that I'm most inspired by when I work with, and that I want to hire and surround myself with in the way that, you know, they can hopefully outpace me, you know, much faster than expected. And that's the goal.
I like the balance. You'd be like, yeah, this is, yeah, I believe the same thing you believe, but you put it much more eloquently than I ever could. But the balance of, the individual kind of competitiveness would combine with the team, you know, putting yourself second to the team. That's spot on. And it's hard to find those people.
It is hard.
Have you read Carolyn Dweck's book, Mindset?
No, but you're the second person that's mentioned that to me in the last 10 days.
It is such an excellent book, and it talks all about that. And I feel like, you know, ex-military people, ex-athletes, it's the reason why they are often so successful. Anyway, sorry.
There's a book I read called The Captain Class. It's about like captains of sport teams, like famous captains, and like why they're good at being captains, and kind of it's a similar thing. Like there's a certain type of humility you need in order to be like pushing people forward, but you have to be like good enough to like get the respect. So last question, you mentioned this before, like, you know, a lot of people, we don't do any of this stuff on our own. So who are your mentors? Who would you, when you look back at your career and your life, like who are the biggest positive influences on you?
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, I've been incredibly fortunate, particularly as an athlete, like you're surrounded by people from a young age that are investing. I'm now realizing this now as a coach. I'm coaching my, you know, both my kids' basketball teams and flag football teams, and, you know, helping out in baseball. And you don't quite, when you're in it, realize the amount of effort it takes for all of these adults around you to, you know, make it all work on a Saturday afternoon. And so I grew up around some really, really wonderful coaches. One that really still sticks out in my mind is one of my college coaches, a guy named Tom Williams, who was my linebackers coach. He also played at Stanford before me. He's, you know, one of the smartest, both academically intelligent as well as football smart people I've ever met. His emotional intelligence is through the roof. And he just was a guy who, again, struck that balance, like I'm talking about, was incredibly competitive and cared deeply about winning and winning, you know, win the day. It was win the drill. You know, it was very focused on kind of the micro, but also just had this like unreal kind of empathy and sense of caring for us as people that sometimes starts to wane as you get, you know, higher in the ranks, whether it's in college or in the professional ranks, where you just feel like you're kind of another body and another number, you know, as part of a large system. And Coach Williams was just one of these people that, I wanted to be like when I grew up is kind of what I, you know, the way I sort of, would describe him. One kind of funny story that I still hearken, you know, on a daily basis, we'd be in the middle of like a team drill and, you know, it's intense. It's the end of a practice. It's violent. You know, we're playing linebacker, which is an exceptionally aggressive, and violent position. And, I'd be either on the field or on the sideline. And, you know, every fourth practice, we'd sort of make eye contact and I'd see him and we'd sort of look over campus and like Hoover Towers, like, you know, sort of like stand up there. This like beautiful sunset's happening. You see palm trees and we would just take like, you know, 2 seconds to sort of like enjoy that. We're like, that's crazy. Like that is beautiful. And this is beautiful. And this is fun. And it just was like this very like connected human moment of like, let's sort of be grateful and appreciate this because this is unique. And so he was one of those guys that, you know, understood that and we would connect on it. And so just, you know, those little tiny moments, I think, are things that I still remember, you know, almost 25 years later. I think the third would be Roy Hirschland, who was the guy that initially brought me into T3 and ultimately was my partner in that business. Again, talk about a guy who took someone that had no experience, had no baseline knowledge. You know, was a meathead football player, you know, trying to become a civilian, you know, in the real world, and just taught me so much around, I think, what it took to be successful in real estate and how to do it the right way. I mean, he was a guy that just led by example and developed a reputation both in the way he worked and the way he raised his family that just I admired, and I think I learned a ton from him just watching him and seeing how much he cared around the people that he hired. I think that was the thing that I really learned and tried to emulate, in the businesses we continue to grow. And the final one would be my dad. I mean, I think that, you know, I think there's no person in this world that was more meaningful to sort of my career as a young age and even still today in terms of, the opinion that I value and the person that I go to with the good news and the bad news. And it's just such a, you know, wonderful, sort of anchor and partner, and all the things that I think really matter most. And so, you know, he's someone that, that has been, I think, an important key in that growth, you know, all along.
I love that image of you and on the field looking up at the, you know, like, oh yeah, this is fun, but there's things much bigger than this. Like,
that's
this
right.
Like, you know, right.
That's right. Put it in perspective.
Well, David, really appreciate you coming on the podcast today. That was a great interview. I love the story. I love what you guys are doing at Reseed. And
awesome.
Can you tell everyone how they can connect with you if they have a great multifamily platform they're looking to grow?
Yes, please do. Yeah. So you can go to our website. It's reseedpartners.com. And there's an investor page and or an operating partner page. So whichever one applies to you, like certainly go on through. It's a name and email and it'll get you in our system and we'd love to hear from you. My email is david@reseedpartners.com. So feel free to email me. We're continuing to look for, again, great operating partners that believe and want to be a part of a long-term focused, you know, kind of compounding of capital, sort of machine. I think that's what we're trying to build and continue to want, you know, a bunch of local operating partners. Additionally, I think there's, you know, we're just trying to spread the word around what we're doing. Cause I think from an LP perspective and an investor perspective, we've had a ton of momentum out of the gate. But, you know, we have really big plans on where we want to take this business, and it's going to require, you know, a lot of capital to get us there. And so we're going to continue to build great relationships with people that understand the journey we're on and want to be a part of supporting that and, you know, be responsible stewards of their money.
Last quick question before we go. What's the minimum investment?
So in our fund to date, it's been $500,000. We will syndicate some portions of each deals and let individuals come in. And that's been at $100,000, so far in terms of minimum check. And so, for folks that works for, great. So it's been trying to make it, you know, some version of it that we can get going for a lot of different people.
Awesome. All right, David, have a great weekend. Great to see you. Hopefully I'll see you in downtown Palo Alto sometime.
Definitely. No, I look forward to it. I really appreciate you guys having me on. So thanks so much.
Thanks for coming on, David.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Resume, a Jackson Lucas podcast, where we take a deep dive into the career journeys of some of the top minds in real estate and equip you with the knowledge to move forward in your path towards the success you've envisioned. Make sure to like, share, and subscribe to Beyond the Resume. Be grateful for your support. All episodes of Beyond the Resume are brought to you by Jackson Lucas, building inclusive and diverse businesses through talent acquisition. Visit us at jacksonlucas.com.